You know I be in the town all day. I be in the S-E-A. You know I be in the town all day. I be in the S-E-A.
Hello and welcome to episode number 112 of the Fabulous Pelton Cast. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Carcino.
And we are coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion Seattle Seahawks. Episode 112, Where the Players Dwell.
Wow, how long were you waiting to say that?
111 episodes.
I knew you were going to say that too. This is bad.
Nothing if not predictable. Nothing if not predictable.
Normally I say that we have a lot to get to. We don't have that much to get to, though.
We got a decent amount to get to. A surprising amount of hockey to get to. I did not anticipate that coming.
Here's what we have to get to. A little something which you may have seen on the Twitter or the Instagram is coming soon.
It sure is. That's talking taco time.
We are going to be talking taco time.
Nobody has ever talked taco time like we are about to talk taco time.
Except for Taco Time, the podcast. They're on like episode 300.
Unfortunately, it's episode 300. It's all imaginary.
Talking taco time will be, at least the first episode, will be on the Peltoncast feed.
Yes, I have not put together a Talkin' Taco Time feed yet, but you'll need to sign up for that to get subsequent episodes of Talkin' Taco
Time. Will you? We're moving those off the feed to a separate feed?
At least at some point, we certainly are. I mean, maybe we'll put the first couple on there for people, but at some point, we got to have separate feeds. So a very special guest. I don't know if we're going to post the photo and give away who the special guest is before we post the actual podcast. Is that our plan?
We'll see.
Okay.
I mean, we're up to 10 whole followers on Twitter for the Talkin' Taco Time Twitter. So I understand why you want to move to a separate feed. No way we can control all of those listener over on this feed.
I think a lot of people are still unfamiliar with the at Talkin' Taco Time Twitter account. So they'll be getting familiar with that. I don't know how much it's going to talk Taco Time, but Taco Time will be talked on Twitter.
So this is going to be Twitter Talkin' Taco Time talk?
Yes.
Okay. I'm ready for that. We should do our beer of the week here because we have to pour one out.
Oh, do we?
And what are we drinking this week?
We are drinking the Bear Republic Grand Am American Pale Ale, which I'm surprised you had went to me to talk about since you picked this up. Inspired by our team's passion for racing, Grand Am is an American Pale Ale worthy of the racer family. True to our roots, this sessionable yet assertive ale balances both classic and new American hop varieties with a distinct malt backbone. Start your engines. Also, do we want to read the brewer notes here? Oh, no, I guess not. We don't need to read that.
This is probably one of the first times we've ever had anything from Bear Republic.
Yeah, I don't recall drinking it on the pot.
Well, the thing that we have to pour one out for is, we'll talk about this more later, but the Husky baseball season.
It was a great season. It was not a great end.
We're cheersing instead of pouring one out. It'd be a huge mess if we actually poured one out.
That's true. It's really more of an expression, but you know, it's important to have the expression. Anyway, it came to a rough end on Monday night in Oklahoma City, or in Omaha, I should say, and we will discuss that further later on. So Husky softball season, of course, that came to an end in Oklahoma City.
That's my least favorite place for things to come to an end.
Do we want to get into our burrito review this week?
Sure.
We went to Taqueria El Jim. I don't know if you're supposed to pronounce that with the Spanish accent. It would, because I don't know if it's shortened to gym. It's gimnasio in Spanish. So I don't know if that would.
I'm going with him. Him.
Okay.
Taqueria el him.
It's going to be awkward when we pronounce it differently throughout the duration of this analysis of this review. This is a place that burst on the scene, I would say, a few years ago in downtown Renton as an exciting burrito option.
Formerly Yummy Juan's.
Yes.
And now rebranded as Taqueria El Jim. This is right next to, I don't know if folks are familiar, but like right next to the 8-Bit Arcade in downtown Renton. One of the coolest spots in all of downtown Renton.
I mean, you say that as if it's a joke, but it is a cool spot.
No, it's a cool spot, and it's one of the coolest spots in all of downtown Renton.
Indisputably accurate.
On Tristan's Best of Renton, it got number one for the last 3 years.
Wow.
Yeah. But before then, it was the Ivers at Coulon.
Okay. Not technically in downtown, but yeah, still in Renton.
It's pretty close. The Landing won it the year before then.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it wasn't a great year for Renton. Anyway, they rebranded, I would say, a couple months ago as Taqueria El Jim. And I've been there twice now. Both times I've ordered the California burrito Al Pastor.
Okay, so the first time I went before Baby Fantasy Genius's birthday party a year ago, I did not order the California burrito, I don't believe. I think I ordered with a traditional burrito.
I'm talking specifically in the Taqueria El Jim era.
Okay, since the rebranding. So this is the first time I have gone since the rebranding. Technically, you went since you picked this up, and I stayed here with your 10 to 25 children. And I got to say, the California burrito, that hit the spot.
It really hit the spot. I mean, there's almost no other way to describe it. There was a perfect balance of just how everything intermingled in the burrito, which is not necessarily an easy thing to do in a California burrito.
So there was a really healthy amount of sour cream and guacamole.
That's what I'm looking for.
Actually, probably more sour cream, because now I'm thinking about it. I got some guacamole because we also got some chips and guac from Taco Time. We're going to talk about it.
Yes.
On Taco Time. And and both of us scooped a little of that out and put it on maybe some of the drier sections of the burrito.
It, really elevated the burrito.
It did. I thought it was interesting that because of everything that was going on in this burrito, the Al Pastor did seem a little marginalized to me.
I would agree with that. I mean, that's the thing about the California burrito is that, like, and, you know, you've had these burritos in California. And do you
I've only once had a California burrito in California, and it was not that great, actually.
I mean, do you feel like, given that you've got the guac, the sour cream, I think there's rice and beans, plus the french fries and the meat, it's almost hard for any one particular flavor to really jump out.
Is there rice and beans in there?
There's definitely something like, there was one or the other.
I think there was probably beans, but not rice.
Okay.
Would be my guess. But I could be completely wrong about that. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Naming things.
These are just burrito ingredients. There might have been lettuce. I don't know.
Wow, lettuce in a burrito?
Yeah, shredded lettuce at Chipotle. You don't get that?
Never.
Oh, wow.
Never. Only in the Chicken Caesar soft taco.
Let me tell you, spoiler alert. There's going to be a Chipotle pod soon, and we will debate Chipotle toppings.
Soon? We're doing this soon? This week? This week you say we're going to Chipotle? I'm ready for it.
Yes, I think that actually probably should be the case.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yes.
I think we should probably tape this pod next week with a special guest.
Ooh.
Never imagine who this might be. Someone who loves to describe fast food. But I wouldn't say that was bad that the Al Pastor was marginalized. It was still a very tasty burrito.
No. I mean, it almost didn't need the Al Pastor to stand out.
Exactly.
You know, like, am I going to go as far as to say, like, this is the most amazing Al Pastor that I've ever had? I don't know. Because it was about the burrito as the whole. No, I don't care. I would eat this burrito again and again and again.
What's your rating for this burrito?
92.
I was going to go 91. I think we're in the same ballpark here.
I mean, it was a great burrito. It was a real weight in your stomach after. I was weighed down for hours because of this burrito. It's big.
Didn't have a problem with it.
I don't know why it seems so large to me. I like had leftover Taco Time food that I was like, I might eat this.
I think you passed the point of too hungry because you had been hungry for a long period of time. You tried to go and then you had to come back because you left your wallet. You called me and asked, like, did I leave my wallet? And then I saw it sitting on the counter.
If you right have there. A phone, I know that there are ways to pay for food with your phone. If you have a phone, you should be able to pay with anything.
It does seem that way. And yet you were unable to do so, weren't you? You could have offered to just go in there and cash them for it.
That's really what I would have liked to have done. I'd be like, hold on, I'm going to set you up on Venmo. Anyway, it's just, I mean, the whole experience, like, I don't know if everything else at the Taqueria El Jim would be at quite this level. I think the California burrito is just a good burrito in general.
And there's not many places in the Seattle area that offer the California burrito.
And
it's a growing number, I would say.
I really enjoyed eating it.
Yeah. Oddly, two locations in downtown Renton offering the California burrito.
Yeah, that's where we're about in downtown Renton.
So I don't know how often the listener is necessarily going to get to Renton for this burrito.
But if you could go to 8-Bit, get a burrito, stop and get a burrito.
An excellent evening for you, I think, if you do those two things. But I would say that at this point, I would anticipate Taqueria El Jim being in our bracket.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I think there's a good chance of that.
I mean, 92 is pretty high.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think through kind of the things that are going to be in the bracket here. We're getting down to it. We've got a lot of tacos and burritos still left to eat, though.
Actually, I think we should try to make this double week.
Okay. I mean, Chipotle is not even eligible to be part of the bracket.
That is an excellent point. But you also posted on Instagram about going to a second location near your new office.
I think it's called like Taqueria Cantina.
That sounds vaguely right. And this is a place I should be able to get to at some point in the near future before a Seattle Storm game, and therefore can review it probably next week, possibly the week after that.
Are you in town over the weekend?
I am in town over the weekend.
I'm going to throw this out there. Maybe we do Asadero Sinaloa this weekend too.
I'm intrigued. My interest is piqued.
I mean, we should do it as a big group because we're going to want to get the meat platter at Asadero Sinaloa.
Oh, you got to get the meat platter.
You have to get the meat platter. We might even get two meat platters.
This is a place, I don't know if anyone is actually eating along with us. It appears not. No one has tweeted us about that, at least. This is a place you should be going with us if you have not been. It is unique in the city of Seattle. I don't think there's anything else like it, doing grilled meats Mexican style.
And, I mean, it's one of I would say, like, the hotter places.
Oh, definitely. Also, I would assume from the Sinaloa region. That's just a guess. Mm. I have not researched that.
So I would be excited for this to be a 3-taco/burrito week.
That's a lot of tacos/burritos, but you know what? I'm up for it.
All right.
We did get, well, we're on the topic of food. We also have to mention, by the way, reminder that this Saturday, June 23rd, is going to be the Shake Shack pop-up at Canlis. I don't think we're planning to.
No, I don't want anything to do with that.
That's too crazy. If you are, again, the free RSVP is needed through their website to attend. We've got that on the PeltonCast post notes.
And if you do go, tag us on an Instagram post to let us know that you are there.
Absolutely.
Take photos, tweet at us. We want to know all about it. We just don't want to go there ourselves.
We just don't want to deal with the crowd that is going to be there. We'll wait for the crowd that is going to be bad enough when the South Lake Union location opens up in the late summer, early fall. I wanted to mention, we got a tweet last week after talking about Geraldine's on the podcast as part of your week of eating.
Oh, that, I missed my week of eating.
It was quite a week, wasn't it? Let's see here. It was our friend at Jesse Catastrophe, minus the E, on Twitter, going currently by the username Le Quijote, but no chivalry and less wealth, noted, no joke that Geraldine's Counter is the best breakfast place in Seattle. Probably maybe a top 10 restaurant
there
in
it is.
Seattle.
I mean, it was number one on my week of eating.
I still disagree that it's the best breakfast place in Seattle.
What is the best? You're all
I'm a port, a team, hashtag team Portage Bay. I mean, this is going to be a contentious topic when we do our best of Seattle on the PeltonCast. I'm really looking forward. We need to make this happen this year. We've talked about it too long without doing it.
Yeah, we'll do a best of Seattle. This is the year for making things happen that we say we're going to do. Look, we're actually doing a Talking Taco Time podcast.
And then the next year, the Seattle Times is going to do their best.
That's what I was going to say. We came up with the idea of a best in Seattle. Damn it. What do we think about the Seattle Times thing here?
I mean, yeah, I'll do them, but...
But in fact, can you just say what we're talking about.
They're doing a burger bracket.
A burger bracket!
It's one thing to do a burger rankings, but to do a burger bracket?
Yeah.
That's coming in on our turf.
Yeah.
That's our territory.
We own burger brackets. And burger rankings, we did both.
I mean, yes, but more importantly, the bracket.
I don't like anything about it. Have they said who the contenders are in the bracket yet?
I did not actually click on the link.
You should click on the link right this second so we can criticize it.
Oh, no.
I'm ready for it.
Okay, matchups in round one. Let's see. It appears they have 32 locations in here.
32 locations. Okay, maybe don't run through all the locations, but like top 4 or 8 seeds.
I don't know. They don't specify the seeds here, and I don't think that.
What kind of bracket is this if they don't have seeds?
It looks like about half the locations in here are places that we went to. Maybe even less than that. There's definitely some places we did not go to. Loretta's in the first round is up against a place called Tipsy Cow Burger Bar. Not familiar with that one.
Okay.
Appears to be on the east side because it's got a 425 number. Lil Woody's is up against Burger Master, a place that I still have never been. I don't know if you've ever been.
Yeah, there. I'm boycotting it at this point.
Are you? Why are you boycotting it?
Just because we haven't been there.
That sounds about right.
That checks out.
And Dix is up against BRGR. Do we go to
Gordon Ramsay's Burger? Dix is not eligible for Best Burger in Seattle.
Did we ever go there? Also, I like that their picture for BRGR is a buttermilk fried chicken burger, which by definition is not a burger.
Well, I mean, it has the word burger in it. I think somebody recommended it, but we actually never went there.
I believe that is the case as well.
I just searched for BRGR. What are some other highlights from this bracket?
I'm not seeing Unita. Oh, no, there is Unita. I just was missing them. Unita's up against Burger and Kebab Hut.
Burger and Kebab Hut?
This actually sounds pretty interesting. I've not heard of that, but that sounds pretty interesting.
My interest was actually piqued about the BRGR place. I'm sad that we never actually made it to that one.
And it's sad that we can no longer eat there because we're done with burgers.
Yeah,
forever.
No. I mean, the thing is, I'm never eating a burger ever again.
I mean, that better not be true. That better not be true, good sir. So there you go. I mean, look, you know.
Coming up in the future, there may be a full week that I eat burgers every single day.
Oh, that'll be interesting. Yeah, if you want to vote in that Seattle Times burger bracket, feel free.
If you don't want to, because you already know what the best burger in Seattle is, and then was revised to be like six
exactly.
months later.
I was going to say, our bracket did not actually pick our choice.
And what the people's choice for best burger in Seattle was. Look, we just named a lot of things best burger in Seattle.
I mean, we like all these burgers. We want to keep people happy. Got to maintain those relationships.
We're going to conclude this burrito slash taco bracket with like champions in different areas.
We already did that with the dump plates. It was a great strategy. Should we talk about sports?
Just stay in your lane, Seattle Times. Just stick to protesting having an arena in the SoDo area. You don't need to get into this burger world. Are you going to delete that?
No, I'll leave that in.
All right. We need podcast Bossa Nova.
So speaking of the arena front, the NHL Seattle group making noise this week by hiring former Phoenix Coyotes coach Dave Tippett as the senior advisor to the team. He spent 7 seasons as coach of the Dallas Stars from 2003 through 2009, and then 8 with the Coyotes from 2010 through the end of last season, won the Jack Adams Award, which is not a name that I knew was that award had, as NHL Coach of the Year in 2010, his first season with the Coyotes, left them after the 2016-17 season. It was reportedly looking for coaching jobs last year. He's age 56. So you would expect him to continue his coaching career. So that's interesting. Would senior advisor eventually transition to coach? It seemed at that point like it might very likely would. But then further drama. Because on Tuesday, a variety of Twitter posts suggested that Barry Trotz, the former head coach of the Washington Capitals, was seen on a flight from D.C. to Seattle. There were a couple of photos of him at SeaTac. It appeared to be the North Terminal. Mm. He was taking Alaska, which, good for him.
I'm in on him now.
Yeah.
Was he seen combining Beecher's mac and cheese with a Lowity's burger?
You can't do that yet.
Okay. Then I would have instantly hired him personally.
If he did that on his way out of the arena, oh yeah, 100%. I'll hire him as coach of any team in Seattle at that point.
Yeah, I mean, the Seahawks hopefully will be looking for a coach soon.
So
Trotz, of course, may be looking for a coach soon.
Trotz, of course, won the Stanley Cup with the Caps just a few short weeks ago before resigning on Tuesday after a contract dispute, had reportedly been looking for a 5-year extension worth around $25 million, which would make him the highest paid coach in the NHL. There's only one NHL team with a current head coaching opening, that being the New York Islanders, and he was also spotted at the Newark airport earlier this week.
Wow.
I don't think they have a Low Woody's or a Beecher's in the Newark airport.
What's the point?
I know that. I've been to the Newark airport. Trotz, before going to Washington, helped launch the expansion Nashville franchise, where he was hired a little over a year before they began play, and coached the Preds for 15 seasons before moving to Washington in 2014. The Caps lost in the second round each of his first 3 years as coach before breaking through to win the Cup this season, and he is age 55. So, interesting.
Okay, so this would be very early to begin a coaching conversation, considering that there's not actually a hockey team.
And more on the timing of it being potentially very early in a second here. But I think part of what they're thinking is, like, right now, the face of the franchise is exclusively the Leiwickies, I guess, and the owners as well. And you know, they can maybe be a little bit of a face, particularly Jerry Bruckheimer having, you know, some degree of fame as a Hollywood producer. But they don't have a hockey point person. And that's when you have an expansion franchise, you inevitably have no players. It's kind of got to be the coach. So having someone like Barry Trotz, who just won the Stanley Cup, is probably as good as you're going to do in that regard.
Well, and then, you know, when you win the Stanley Cup, you want to get him out of the NHL for a couple of years, a solid 2 or 3 years, right?
It would be a really unusual move. But again, there's not that many openings for NHL head coaches right now. So that seems to be good news for the Seattle franchise if they do indeed hope to land Barry Trotz.
I mean, did the Capitals hire another head coach?
Well, I guess that's true. There are two. I hadn't thought about that. No, I don't think they have. I guess he could go back.
It seems like kind of a strange situation, right? I mean, he could be using Seattle as leverage, right?
I suppose that's possible. I don't think that you would announce that you were resigning if that was your plan, though. Would you?
That you would announce that you're resigning?
Yeah. I mean, you would just go meet with teams because he's no longer under contract after the season.
He's calling their bluff.
All right.
I'm just saying it's an option because this would be pretty aggressive of him.
It certainly would be.
I mean, this would be like Steve Kerr being like, I'm taking 2 years off or more, right?
A little bit. I mean, in Kerr's case, it's a little different because of his health issues. I mean, it would actually be somewhat reasonable for him to do that. But yes, Barry Trotz doing this like right in his prime is he's going to be the hottest coaching commodity he's ever going to be. It would be very unusual.
Okay, so what about the timing of the hockey team that you were mentioning?
So a piece from Jeff Baker in the Seattle Times reporting something that I'd heard some rumblings about previously, that Seattle land use lawyer Courtney Kaler, representing the owners of the Expo and Astro apartment complexes near Key Arena, wrote in a response to the draft environmental impact study published, I think it was last month, but maybe it was 2 months ago at this point, quote, is replete with incomplete and inconsistent statements and should be, quote, revised and republished and subject to additional public comment. Among other, most notably perhaps, Kaler argued that the EIS should treat the renovation as a public project, which would require the examination of an alternative site, much the same as we saw with the Soto Arena project, where at that point they considered Key Arena is an alternative site in the environmental impact study. That could lead to an appeal that would delay the approval of the EIS in the beginning of construction. And if it gets pushed back past this fall, then they would not be able to complete construction in time for the anticipated 2020 opening and the arrival of an expansion team. But here's the thing. Even if there isn't a lawsuit, at this point, if I could bet on this, which even with gambling becoming legal, not in the state of Washington yet, I don't think you can bet on this, but I would not bet on the arena opening until 2021. Because the other issue at play here, part of the reason that these apartment complexes are so upset is something that we've talked about in the past. I believe I may have referred to around-the-clock construction. It's not quite that dramatic. But having revisited the environmental impact study, the proposal from Oakview Group at this point calls for truck hauling 18 hours a day.
Wow.
From the Key Arena
site. I like the idea of it being around the clock, 24 hours a day, Christmas morning, every single day of the year. No one gets a break.
Everyone is working that whole time. The alternative two that was explored in the environmental impact study limited hauling to approximately 8 hours a day or less during business hours and concluded that if that option was taken, that total construction would then take at least 30 months instead of the 24 months under the alternative one that Oakview is proposing. And I feel like the concerns of those apartment complexes are valid enough that no one wants, you know, look, construction is a fact of life.
These are condos also, not apartment complexes.
Yes,
yes.
Construction is a fact of life in Seattle at this point, but around-the-clock construction, or late-night construction at least, is not
a 18 hours a day?
That's a lot of hours. That's 3/4 of the hours in a day.
And this is not just in the Seattle summer days where there's 18 hours of sunshine.
It's not, no. You know, most people like to sleep more than 6 hours, I've found. So
does that mean that do you feel like between this combination of things that there's a chance that there could not be hockey in Seattle until 2022?
I don't think 2022 is particularly likely. I think 2021 is when this would happen, is my read on the situation, is the most likely outcome at this point.
And before, the most likely outcome seemed like it was 2020.
I mean, that's obviously what Oakview has been pushing towards all along. That's why the, you know, the vote was held last year when it was. And, you know, there was a very strict schedule. And I think one of the things we pointed out is, like, everything had to go perfectly to hit that schedule. And now it looks like things are not going to go perfectly. So, I mean, obviously very disappointing news if you're excited to have hockey in Seattle. I mean, and again, not news, very disappointing possibility. Let's go with that. But certainly
something to keep an eye on. What's one more year off to Barry Trotz?
I mean, look, he's still getting paid.
Man, that really would be the best job.
Dakota just team that doesn't exist.
Yeah, that would be the best. You can't lose a game. You could do like general scouting, right? Basically just like sitting around and watching hockey, doing some thinking about hockey, maybe going and meeting up with some teams and talking hockey strategy or something.
Sounds a lot like my job. Costanza. It feels like a perfect Jerry Costanza job.
George
like,
Costanza also.
I don't know why I'm conflating those. Yes, it feels like a perfect job for him. Like, what do you do? Oh, I'm a coach of a hockey team. Oh, when do you play? We don't play. We have no games.
That's what Barry Trotz is about. No wonder he's been here. I also like the mention that people were talking about SeaTac because it let, you know, there's a growing group of us Taya High School alums out there.
In terms of they had graduation recently, it's growing?
No.
Oh, you mean just listening to the Pelton is the
just in Seattle sports.
Okay.
The Taya High School alums are catching up with you, Mount Rainier people.
You're on the come up. I mean,
oh yeah, we're up to three now.
I mean, look, I did an interview with Dick Fain today. Two Mount Rainier guys talking sports on the radio.
That's
a thing that happened.
Awful.
We let Softy join in with us too.
Anyway, all the mentions of SeaTac that we can get, I'm in on.
Okay. I don't dispute that. You wanted to preview the NBA draft. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You don't like to talk NBA.
That's, you know, it's I already do it 18 hours a day.
Nonstop. 24 hours a day. Well, just kind of looking at this, both from the Portland perspective of where they're sitting. You know, I've skimmed through my share of mock drafts, and I'm not familiar with any of the players that are in Portland's range. I've heard of the guy from France.
Elia Kobo?
Yeah, he
That's
seems
the
like...
one you've heard of?
When I, also Grayson Allen. Those are the two
what about
who...
Dante DiVincenzo? He scored 31 points
him too.
In the championship.
Him also.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to draft any of those guys.
But these are just the players in that range that I've even heard of.
So the interesting news on Tuesday is that the Blazers brought in Anfernee Simons for a second workout.
Okay.
Simons was at...
Are we calling him Penny yet? Where do we stand on this?
Penny 2.0.
Okay.
Can we go with that? He played last year, I'm pretty sure, at the IMG Academy. Did not play high-level college, did not play college basketball, but is eligible for the draft anyway. And he also played Adidas AAU, so I haven't yet translated his stats. I did Nike EYBL translated stats for my draft projections this year, but do not have any projections for Simons yet.
Well, you don't have IMG Academy translations?
I'm afraid I don't know the strength of schedule
not
that they play.
Working
against.
Enough hours a day.
Yeah, I need to ramp it up a little bit.
Is he supposed to be in that range though?
No, he was considered likely to go in the somewhere in the 30s in the second.
Oh,
round,
really?
Maybe
so they would
the
be overdrafted. I was thinking of him
it seems like
as like a mid first round pick.
It seems like he might be a hot commodity at this point. He had another workout scheduled for a team that was drafting. I can't remember who the team. Oh, he canceled a workout with the Grizzlies.
What position does Anfernee Simons play?
I believe two guard. I know shockingly little about Anfernee Simons because I don't have any stats on him.
Oh, and you don't watch the games.
Well, again, IMG Academy, not readily available on national television.
You didn't watch IMG Academy versus Kentucky this year? What is IMG Academy?
It's like basically a place they develop a lot of.
It's like the sixth biggest booking agency in the world.
They develop a lot of players in individual sports like tennis, I think. Is big at IMG Academy, but they also have a basketball program as well. Huh. And they've sent players from that program to the NBA, just not usually
Why
directly from
Why did he
from
not them. Play in college?
Not entirely sure. Again, I'm woefully underinformed on Anfernee Simons. I'm just telling you, he was going to work out in Memphis, who has the 32nd pick. So.
And he canceled that?
Yes.
Oh.
In favor of this Portland. They also had, by the way, in Zanin Musa, Bosnian wing who rates really well. He rates in the top 10 in my projections.
Really?
He's probably who I would draft if I were the Blazers.
Wait, what's his name?
Zanin Musa.
Zanin, that's who we should be cheering for? Is he going to be coming to the U.S. right away, or is he a stash player?
I would assume so. I mean, he's been out here working out for teams on a regular basis, including now the Blazers.
What about, I guess, just even looking at the top of the draft, you've done a little bit of talking about this kind of on SportsCenter and some slightly bigger platforms than the Pelton Cast.
Very similar.
But what is your stance of the players who are, it seems to me like kind of the consensus top four, something like Ayton, Bagley, Doncic, and Jaren Jackson?
Yes.
Where do you stand on these four players?
So I think Doncic is the clear number one prospect. He has the best projection that I've ever done for anyone going back to 2003, a period where we don't have LeBron James because there were no, he was playing at IMG Academy. No,
to Darko, back to Darko's projection.
I don't have Darko projections in there either because I don't have full internationals back quite that far, but do have like Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh. And then it's basically everyone from about 2008 onward. Have in there, and he has surpassed Anthony Davis for the highest projection on record. So, I mean, look what he's done in terms of his production at this age in EuroLeague is unprecedented. So, I think he's likely going to be a very good player in the NBA.
Instantly.
Probably. I mean, I think he's got the best chance of being the best player next year.
What about some of the other prospects in that top range?
So, I have Ayton number two just because of the fact that like some people feel so strongly that he's number one, or at least, you know, that he and Doncic are in a tier of their own, that like I kind of am deferring to that wisdom at this point. I think they're, you know, statistically, I wouldn't say they're a red flag. There are concerns. His block rate is a concern. But, you know, still when you factor in that he's number one in the top 100 that Jonathan Givony and Mike Schmitz put together for ESPN, he still comes out as the number two overall prospect in my model, even after I've adjusted downward the value of centers, reflecting the fact that it's become so easy to find capable centers kind of similar to running backs in the NFL.
The talk about DeAndre Ayton was that he's this amazing offensive player, which granted we watched him and he's a good offensive player, but I felt like people were exaggerating it like just a hair.
Yes.
And especially there was talk about him being able to have 3-point range. Was he shooting threes at college?
He shot a few of them. I think 35 off the top of my head.
Like I didn't see him. He seemed like a mid-range center. I mean, Andre Drummond, it was just like Andre Drummond to me is exactly what DeAndre Ayton reminds me of.
Oh, no, no. I mean, he's a much better shooter than that. He shot 73% on free throws, so it's just miles better. I think like Drummond shot like 40% in college, if that. Maybe even less than that.
So just because the difference between him or somebody like that is because he's got that mid-range jump shot.
And he did make 12 threes in 35 attempts last year. So he's not like a non-shooter by any stretch of the imagination.
So you think he'll be a good offensive player right away?
I think he'll be a good offensive player. And he does seem to have perhaps the highest floor. Like he's going to be at least a useful NBA player. To me, like for him to be the best player in this draft, though, he has to get way, way better defensively.
What does it mean for Marquese Chriss? Anything?
By the way, he shot, let's see here, Andre Drummond shot 30% of free throws at UConn. So,
wow.
So
didn't he go to Georgetown?
Drummond?
No. He went to UConn?
Yeah, he did. Ayton shot about 2.5 times as well in free throws as he did.
So he's a much better shooter.
I really like Jeremy.
I mean, I guess I do remember watching him and being like, fuck, that guy can shoot free throws too.
And he made the mid-rangers against UW, against the zone. Jaren Jackson is like, after Doncic, my favorite relative to expectations of this group. Like, he's probably going to go no higher than fourth, but a great three-point shooter. He's very similar, I think, to Serge Ibaka, but a little bigger. And I think he's got a chance to have better feel for the game than Serge Ibaka does because Ibaka came to the game so late.
I'm kind of I know nothing about Jaren Jackson, but I'm kind of fascinated with him.
He's like the most modern of the bigs in the top of this draft. And one of the weird things is that after this playoffs where bigs did not play a very important role, now the top of the draft is going to be basically all bigs and Doncic and maybe Michael Porter at some point.
And so he's a modern player because he's big, can play defense, and can shoot threes.
Yep. And people think that, you know, he'll be able to switch a little bit defensively.
Why is he not? I mean, I guess he's kind of like the clear top four pick in the draft.
He might not go top four at this point.
That to me is like what every single team is looking for, right?
The big key is he's not a high usage player. Like the comparison that generally gets made for him is Al Horford.
Uh-huh.
So like Al Horford's a really great number two or number three player, but you know, if he's the best player on your team, we're probably not going to be very good.
If you could guarantee that you could have Al Horford's career from Jaren Jackson, would he be worth the number one pick in the draft?
I would still not take him over Doncic, but I would take him number two at that point.
Really? So the possibility of Doncic being that much better than Al Horford?
Yes.
Wow. I mean, I guess he has your best projection ever. This is including people. Does this include Durant?
Yes.
This includes like KD, Greg Oden, who was a monster prospect at the time, yes. Harden, Westbrook,
yep.
Karl Anthony Towns, Anthony yep. Davis.
All those guys.
Just every single player in the NBA except for LeBron.
I mean, not every single player. Like Vince Carter is still in the NBA. I don't have a projection for him. Didn't have a prediction for Jason Terry. That's too far back. They didn't do advanced stats yet.
Jamal Crawford, Jason Terry.
It's all Seattle guys.
And then what about Michael Porter?
Well, he's one of the wild cards where he's going to go. There was some talk of him to Sacramento at number two. It sounds like they really
has that cooled.
It has cooled. It sounds like they really like Marvin Bagley.
How real do you think that is?
I mean, it seems like he's the only one who went to work out for them. Like that's probably a pretty big deal.
Okay. So something about me is like nervous that they're going to take Doncic, and I for some reason want him on like Memphis.
Now it sounds like Atlanta. Woj reported on
would
Tuesday
take him if he was there.
Atlanta has like moved towards the direction of taking Doncic.
That'd be kind of fun, right?
Yeah.
Atlanta having a good player.
He would have the chance to be the best Atlanta player in a while.
Since Dominique.
Potentially, yeah.
Since Al Horford.
Yeah. I mean, Millsap was probably better than Horford. I don't know. That's a debate for another day.
I just feel like Atlanta having a good basketball team would be fun.
Yeah. I agree with that.
I mean, they've already got the best show on TV.
That is true. I mean, if Doncic made a cameo on Atlanta, that's the best outcome of this whole
thing. If he goes to Sacramento, that's not happening.
It's true.
So Michael Porter Jr., do you feel like does he fall past pick 7, Chicago?
Probably not.
Is that the most likely place for him to end up?
I don't know off the top of my head.
I mean, it's hard to look at Michael Porter and having watched him at various times last year when he was a senior in high school and being like, this is a player who's ready for the NBA right now as a high schooler, is what it felt like. He had that kind of non-year at Missouri, but that doesn't mean that he's worse. I understand
he might be worse.
I understand the injury risk and the injury concern, but the upside is so high.
I would take him over a few of the centers, the big men who are likely to go over ahead of him, including Bagley.
So if you had to just draft based upon your preference, irrelevant of the teams, where would he go?
So if I was just doing like my top 100?
Yeah.
I would probably have, it's between him and Trae Young and Jaren Jackson. Those guys are 3 through 5 in some order.
And Doncic and Ayton are number 1 and 2.
Yeah.
All right. Are there any other Northwest players who are going to be in the draft?
You know, Oregon has Mikal McIntosh, who might get drafted in the second round, but that's pretty
unlikely.
I consider
Oregon Northern California. I didn't mean them.
Okay.
But it's a weird year where this sounds crazy, but the Huskies have been involved in the draft so many years in a row.
It is very unusual, and perhaps we'll be again next year with Matisse Thybulle as a senior and the possibility of Jalen Noel breaking out as a sophomore. But the Huskies will be involved in the draft because Mike Hopkins is going to be part of Yahoo's live draft coverage on Thursday.
He's the new Woj.
He's actually the new Tom Crean, who now is working for ESPN. I am obligated to note here that in addition to the traditional draft coverage on ESPN, we'll also be airing a live special edition of The Jump on ESPN2 throughout the draft, plus a streaming-only option with Ryan Russillo, among others.
And what are you going to be doing during the draft?
Probably trade grades.
Trade grades. Oh,
hopefully a big trade happens. And then you'll recall last year, like the pod, like it was windy on the live broadcast, like reading my grade aloud for everyone on the podcast. Hopefully this year that happens on The Jump.
That'd be pretty cool. Is he going to be on The Jump?
He is among the people.
I sat and watched that, like it was literally just Jade filming people sitting. I think Rachel Nichols was in on that.
Right, so
right,
yeah.
It was like Wendy and Jade filming and Han and Rachel Nichols.
Did Amin ever drop by? Amin dropped by.
He probably,
right?
Probably dropped by.
He'll also be on that Jump special.
This is a little bit higher budget that they're getting for this year.
That is safe to say, yes.
But they're really just taking that, right, and turning it into The Jump, adding in probably Paul Pierce or something.
I believe there will be some X players. I'm not sure exactly who.
I'll watch that. That's streaming or that's on ESPN2?
That's on ESPN2.
What is the streaming option from ESPN?
I know Ryan Russillo is involved. It's kind of similar to what they were doing in the playoffs with Russillo and Jacoby.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
I'll turn into the Jump, though, and watch that. I mean, the thing is, watching the draft is great. The ESPN coverage of the draft is amazing. But really, it's a lot of just like finding out who the picks are. And you just want to see people that you trust their opinions, like that kind of group of people, just talking about random stuff.
Exactly.
You know, and like the way that they could do it on that second screen, or on whatever they called it last year, basically, like,
because you're not tied to like we have to spend 5 minutes on every single pick.
Yes, they're kind of jumping around. I mean, to me, that's what I want to see. Though it's like you're sitting in a room hanging out with these people, and Wendy's like rebooting his phone while it's happening.
That was an all-timer. Yeah, that's the goal. So hopefully it goes well.
I thoroughly enjoyed watching that. And the chances of them mentioning you during the actual draft, pretty slim.
I've been mentioned on the draft broadcast before. Has happened. Yeah.
Oh, well. La-dee-da. Your ability to tie knots. they gave that an F.
Yeah, as well they should have.
So you'll be doing trade grades throughout the draft, though, for any trades that happen.
Yeah, tweeting.
Of which there were some big ones last year.
Yeah, so hopefully that comes down again this year.
You want there to be big trades?
At least one, yeah.
Who do you think is most likely to be a big trade?
I mean, I don't think Kawhi is really likely. So, I don't know. It would have to be something that would be a bit of a surprise, honestly.
I mean, last year, we knew there was a lot of smoke. We thought maybe Paul George would be traded also.
Yes.
But we knew there was a lot of smoke around Jimmy Butler, too.
Yeah, there's no one who's as clear a candidate, because I don't think Kawhi, if it does happen, is going to move that quickly. But, you know, if they really want the 10th pick from Philadelphia, maybe it will. And that's where maybe Markelle Fultz gets involved.
Really?
Yeah.
Have you heard there's rumors about this?
I mean, rumors is too strong, but if the Sixers and Spurs are going to make a trade, then Fultz would probably be involved.
So,
and that could reunite the Fultz, DeJounte, and Burry backcourt that never was for the Huskies.
Oh, man, could have been. In our heads, NCAA champion backcourt.
I always celebrate that championship. Right there with the 1960 football championship.
So you think the basis of that trade would look something like Markelle Fultz plus the 10th pick plus?
Dario Saric. I mean, maybe they'd bulk it, give you all three of those things, but that's what San Antonio would probably want in that deal.
For Kawhi?
I mean, maybe Covington.
If you were Philadelphia, would you do that?
Probably not without assurances that he would stay beyond next season.
Does it feel weird having your coach make that trade, not having a GM make that trade?
A little, but a lot of teams do that.
Okay, that's interesting. Or there could be something that happens with Cleveland.
Yeah, some Kemba Walker buzz.
Okay, what about CJ McCollum?
I don't think he's going anywhere.
At all, ever? Or at least this offseason?
I mean, in his entire life? I don't know if he's going to finish his career in Portland. That's a long time.
You don't think this offseason the backcourt of Lillard and McCollum is going to get shaken up?
I don't anticipate that.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm looking forward to the draft. It's one of the best nights of the year.
Sure is.
I mean, I live for watching Wendy reboot his phone.
We can only hope that it happens live on air this year. All right. It is time for your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
I'm going to go ahead and get out ahead of this one because I know some people are going to be a little bit late on it. And I know you're over there talking about how great the Mariners are. They're amazing in one-run games. They're never going to lose again. But
totally sustainable.
I'm sorry. The jig is up.
Oh, no.
And I knew it was coming. You want to know how I knew?
How did you know?
I saw that tickets were sold out for the game on Sunday, and people got a little bit too excited. And when you get a little bit too excited about things and you start expecting to win, that's when you lose. And you could feel that split series with the Red Sox that happened. They were hanging on, right? By the skin of their teeth in that series. They didn't deserve to win either of those games. The Mariners, both one-run wins that they got lucky to have. They go into New York, get destroyed in game one, get destroyed on Sunday against the Red Sox. The jig is up. We are looking at a team that over the next 10 games, I don't mean to exaggerate here, 0-10 for the next 10 games.
0-10? Oh, no.
I mean, we are talking about a cratering that is going so expected by many people that will be shocked when it happens.
Yeah.
This team is going to be out of the wild card within the next 2 weeks because people got too excited about them. And you don't get excited about baseball in June.
I mean, that's going to be pretty difficult. There's 7.5 games up on the Angels for the second wild card.
2 weeks.
Wow.
You don't get excited about baseball in June, and that's what happened. People committed the number one mistake. They didn't realize that the soccer season is long. We all realize that. The MLS season. The baseball season is somehow even longer. It is June.
There's a lot more games. That's true.
Let me see if I'm counting this correctly. July, August, September.
That checks out. That math checks out.
3 more months. That's like 90 more games of baseball.
I believe there are 89 more games as we
are there really
today.
There are 89 more games of baseball right now. Yep. And we were acting like this team was in the playoffs because they won some close one-run games. I mean, come on. They're going to lose all six or seven, however many this road trip is, against the Yankees and the Red Sox. And people are not going to have seen it coming.
But you are going to see it coming. or did see it coming or have seen it coming.
I'll especially have seen it coming after it happened.
You always do. It's amazing. I really don't have much to add to this analysis.
You just agree?
Of course. You finally came around to my side. It's so fitting that both their wins against the Red Sox were by one run. Do you want to talk about your experience attending the Mariners game last Wednesday in happier times?
I don't know if I should.
When they got a walk-off win to complete the sweep over the Angels?
It was full-on the most excited that I've been about baseball since the 95 playoffs.
Wow. Not even the 97 playoffs?
Didn't really care about the 97 playoffs.
Oh, you cared about Jeff Fassero. Don't lie.
Once Ken Cloud lost in Baltimore, it was over for me.
Oh, shouts to Ken Cloud.
I'm not even joking. I don't know. Maybe I cared more than the 97 playoffs. But it was definitely up there. With the Mariners coming back and winning that game, I was like, oh, wow, this is kind of happening.
It was a moment.
We were on a baseball high from the Huskies, you know? We were just riding that baseball high. But then guess what?
The bubble got burst.
And what is about to happen to the Mariners?
It's about to be what happened to the Huskies after the rain delay?
After the rain delay.
Oh, no.
Right now, that Red Sox series was before the rain delay. They were up by one run, feeling pretty good, being like, wow, can't believe that we're beating Oregon State. And then after the rain delay, they realized who they were playing.
It's my old analogy of the cartoon character running off the cliff and not looking down, but then you look down and it's all over.
Yeah. So I don't think it would be an exaggeration to say that the season is all over for the Mariners.
Wow. It's starting to be less of an exaggeration to say that the season might be over, despite its long length, for the Seattle Sounders, who lost 2-1 on Wednesday at the New York Red Bulls in a game that could have been much worse. The Red Bulls had 4.2 shot-based expected goals to the Sounders 0.7 and 3.0 non-shot expected goals to the Sounders 0.9. So this was not a case of the Sounders getting unlucky. They were, in fact, somewhat lucky to even be in the match.
Yeah, the cases of them being unlucky, seem to have stopped happening.
They faded lately. The Sounders got a goal back in the 87th minute from Harry Shipp after conceding the first two, but could not get the equalizer. In the dying stages of this game, Osvaldo Alonso made his first start since May 5th, but the Sounders' playoff odds now down to 27%. They had last weekend off and returned to action this Saturday, hosting the Chicago Fire in a game that has become additionally crucial with each loss. Chicago comes in seventh in the East with 1.19 points per match. They are playing Atlanta on Wednesday in the U.S. Open Cup, from which the Sounders have already been eliminated, so will be a little bit more of a busy week for them. And the Chicago Fire forward Nemanja Nikolic, not to be confused with Jokic or Nemanja Bjelica, won last year's MLS Golden Boot with 24 goals, so keep an eye on him. Also of note on the Sounders front, Morelia sent off Raul Ruy Diaz in a tweet last week congratulating him on signing with the Sounders, which was awkward because the Sounders still have yet to confirm his signing or say anything official about Ruy Diaz's arrival after the World Cup. He came on as a substitute late in Peru's opening match, did not really factor into the match at all that I saw.
Still, Sounders bringing on a player who's playing in the World Cup.
Yeah.
That's something.
I mean, he's going to be a big addition. It's just perhaps a little too late.
Under Coach Barry Trotz next year.
That would be great.
Nobody considered that he was coming to town to meet with the Sounders.
If they just loaned him to the Sounders for the next 2 years.
Yeah.
They would ruin the whole job of not doing anything.
It is true.
The Seattle Reign managed a scoreless draw.
We just move on from the Sounders like that. Just like, dude, we don't want to think about this anymore.
Did you have something more to add?
It's going to be a long rest of the season.
It is. Scoreless draw for the Reign at Washington last weekend. They will be back home to host the North Carolina Courage on Saturday. On the Seattle Storm front, sad news last week with the passing of former Storm coach Ann Donovan, who died at the age of 56 of heart failure. So we're pouring one out for Ann. A very nice tribute from the Storm to their former coach before they played the Connecticut Sun last Friday and managed to get a big win in that game over the Sun, who came in with the WNBA's best record. The Storm reached 100 points for the third time this season, already matching last year's full season total. But then riding all that momentum. They lost at home Tuesday night earlier, as before we recorded this, to the Las Vegas Aces, who came in just 3-9 on the season and had lost their previous meeting in Seattle 101-74 when the Storm set a record for WNBA record for three-pointers. Storm were playing that game without Sue Bird due to rest and Alicia Clark with an ankle injury, and now 0-2 this season when Sue Bird doesn't play and 8-2 when she does. So still at, even in the advanced stages of her career, Sue, incredibly valuable to the Storm, who will wrap up their homestand on Friday against the 1-10 Indiana Fever, and then visit the Dallas Wings on Sunday and the Minnesota Lynx on Tuesday in their first matchup with the defending champs, who are off to a slow start at 5-6. That's something the Storm have been keeping a close eye on, because is part of their trade for Natasha Howard, who's been great so far this season as their starting center. The Storm gave up the right to swap first-round picks next year at the Lynx. So if the Lynx end up with a worst record, that deal ends up being a huge, huge deal for the Storm.
Well, and really, most importantly of all this, again, RIP to Ann Donovan, the coach who brought Seattle their first professional championship since 1979.
Yeah, won that championship in 2004. And it hit me hard personally. I mean, she was the first coach I really covered as a beat writer because of my schedule when I was an intern for the Sonics and Storm in college. I wasn't able to cover the Sonics that closely the first couple of years, but was able over the summers to do it with the Storm and really cover them day in and day out and learned a great deal from Ann Donovan. So have been thinking about a lot of memories of her in the recent days. All right, as we mentioned earlier, UW Baseball swept out of the College World Series, suffering a heartbreaking walk-off 1-0 loss in their opener on Saturday to Mississippi State, and then the 14-5 blowout loss to Oregon State on Monday to end their season, led 5-4 going into the 4-hour and 31-minute delay due to thunderstorms.
So long.
I thought the game was getting canceled at that point. I thought they were calling it off. I had given up on it. The Beavers scored 10 unanswered runs in the 5 innings after the delay. I mean, I think this was probably going to happen anyway. It was probably a case of the Beavers regressing to the mean. But yeah, it was a tough way for that to happen.
I mean, the one we can't even look at that game and be like, what could have been? Because, I mean, they lost by almost 10 runs.
Sure did.
The one before it on Saturday night, though.
Especially such a great start by Joe Demers through 7 1/3 scoreless innings before getting lifted. And it seemed like, I don't know if this was an overcorrection to leaving him in too long at Fullerton.
I think
in the deciding game
was.
Of that series. It seemed like this was too quick. He'd only thrown 72 pitches.
I'm a little bit skeptical about Lindsey Meggs' decision on his timing for inserting relief pitchers.
It wasn't great in this series.
I mean, we're talking about a college baseball coach. So like, I shouldn't be that shocked by this. I mean, if I paid more attention to college baseball, I might have a better feel for this. But these were like the third and fourth college baseball games I've ever watched in my entire life. So
that's about right.
You know.
Same here.
But I think that we have to look back at that game and especially look at the situation where the Huskies had, I think this was in like the fourth or fifth inning, where they had the bases loaded and one out and couldn't score.
Yep.
And that was the situation in this close game, where if they would have taken the lead, I think everything might have looked a little bit differently.
And especially against a Mississippi State team that, as we previewed, was better offensively than, you know, in terms of defense and pitching. For them not to score a run in this game was a disappointment, I think. It was a bit of a rough series, I would say, College World Series for Joe Wainhouse, who really didn't do much of anything at bat.
And in his last series in college baseball.
Indeed, one of three key seniors for the Huskies. They'll graduate this year. Also, shortstop Levi Jordan, who was so phenomenal defensively for them. And then relief pitcher Alex Hardy. In addition to them, the Huskies also had three juniors drafted in the first 11 rounds of the MLB draft to review. Starting pitcher Joe Demers in the 11th round. Second baseman A.J. Graffanino, another terrific defender and emerging hitter, let's go with, in the 8th round. And then third baseman Willie McIver in the 9th round. So you would expect all three of those to head off
to
pro
catcher?
Baseball. Yeah, I believe he was drafted as a catcher, yes.
The real wild card here is that I've heard of all these people.
It was very unexpected.
I know
ago.
Who all these people are who you're talking about.
Yeah.
It was a great season. I mean, this was the best season in Husky baseball history.
The best result, yeah, for sure.
They managed to make us care about Husky baseball.
And there was a lot of talk on the broadcast about how much this is going to help recruiting. And the Huskies already under Lindsey Meigs have kind of been emerging, which is, you know, what enabled them to get to this point.
There we go. Let's keep going.
Yeah, I think there's a chance for them to build off this success. I don't know. You know, I wouldn't expect them to get back to the College World Series next year, but a chance to build sustainable success. On the football front, did you see that the Huskies landed their first recruit for the 2020 class?
There have been a lot of whoops lately.
There have. And it's a guard from Idaho named Guard Memelar.
Yes.
What happens if the coaches decide he's better at tackle or center?
No, like, they can't do it.
He's got to play guard.
He has to play guard.
It was destined. It was foretold.
It was prophesied
to be so.
I'm so excited about this for all the reasons, pun-wise. Also, you know I love offensive linemen.
That's true. No one loves offensive line recruits more than you do.
So everything about this is great.
I don't know. We need to go too deep in the analysis. I mean, 2020,
is tackle rising junior. First name? Tackle could be a last name.
I suppose. I've never met anyone named
Center.
Tackle. You met a center?
No, but I mean, it could be a name.
I guess so.
Okay.
All right. Fair enough.
Maybe this will be the only player whose position and name are the same.
It seems likely.
Okay.
Maybe someone else can think of something.
Nickel.
Yeah, Nickel. Roby Coleman. Noted Nickelback.
There you go.
Okay. All right.
We got there.
On the Seahawks front, news that seems kind of ancient now because it came out shortly after we released last week's podcast. They have hired former Colts GM Ryan Grigson as a consultant after he spent 2017 as a senior personnel executive for the Browns. That wasn't a joke. That was just a lie.
I didn't know that he spent last year at the Browns. I'm just learning that. So they're like, Ryan Grigson, they saw his tenure as Colts GM and then his 1 year with the Browns. Did they win a game?
I don't know. Did they win a game?
Was that the winless team? The Browns definitely were winless at some point. I don't remember if that was last year or not.
I think it was last year.
And they saw his tenure with the Browns and they were like, we need him as a consultant.
I mean, I'm not sure their record last season really reflects Ryan Grigson at all.
Still!
Yo, Grigson, he's won one more Executive of the Year trophy than...
Oh my God.
Any of us on this podcast, certainly.
He won an Executive of the Year trophy?
Yeah, his first year in Indianapolis.
For
drafting Andrew Luck.
I mean, he managed to draft the second, maybe third best quarterback in that draft.
No, they had... Who else?
I don't know. Was Kirk Cousins in that draft?
Oh, yeah, Kirk Cousins was in that draft. Luck is better than Kirk Cousins.
Is he?
I think he is.
Okay, career value on Pro Football Reference. Whose is higher, Kirk Cousins or Andrew Luck?
Oh, definitely Luck.
Are you sure?
Cousins didn't play his first couple years.
It's been a while since Andrew Luck's played.
It's been one season. Recency bias much? The tension here is Pro Football Reference struggles
so
to load.
To load. So you can remove this.
I don't know why it's not loading here.
It doesn't want you to know the truth.
Pro Football Reference is down for me. It refuses to load.
Ugh! I have some horrible news to report.
What's that?
Pro Football Reference is down.
We'll never know the answer to this conundrum.
I really wanted to look through that draft and see where Andrew Luck ranked as far as career added value and see some of the hilarious names.
Approximate value, good sir. Approximate
sorry,
value.
Sorry, career approximate value.
But it wasn't just Luck in 2012. The Colts also that year in Grigson's first year as GM, I believe, drafted T.Y. Hilton, Dwayne Allen, and Kobe Fleener. So those guys all played a big role in them going from being terrible, getting the number one pick.
For one year. They went from having Peyton Manning be injured to having Andrew Luck.
So after that year was not as great for the Colts. They failed to yield much talent from the draft. They relied too heavily on overpaid veteran free agents. And Grigson really loved trading his GM, most infamously for Trent Richardson.
He's no trader, Jerry.
To better effect with Vontae Davis. But ultimately, he was really the victim of infighting with Chuck Pagano that led to his demise as Colts GM. I mean, look.
Oh, that's good. You're going to want to bring him in.
Can I give a take here?
What?
It's not that big of a deal.
No, it doesn't matter. But it's just like, just adding on top of everything else that's happened. They're like, let's just bring in Ryan Grigson.
Especially the fact that, like, Seahawks and, like, the whole Luck Wilson thing.
Well, and also, I mean, this kind of makes sense in a way, but like the Colts, this is probably more of a Stanford problem, but having Andrew Luck and still running the ball from like power sets, it's like, that's your future, Seahawks fans. That's what's happening. They might as well just brought in Pep Hamilton as the offensive coordinator.
Why? Why?
Just be ready for 2 and 3 tight end sets.
So by the way, I know you didn't read this because it was on The Athletic. Our buddy Ben B had a post today about where Russell Wilson ranks among NFL quarterbacks. He concluded that he's in a tier of top 6 quarterbacks in the NFL.
That when feels
you look
about
at all
right.
The adjusted metrics. Does it feel all right? Because on this very podcast, with this very Ben B, is our third Pelton brother. At the beginning of the year, at the end of the NFL season, you said he was, quote, 8th through 15th in the NFL. Really, do you want to apologize for this comment now?
I've walked it back so many times since then. It was the day after the season ended. We're still in the halo of missing the playoffs. Do you realize what Pete Carroll has done because the Seahawks didn't make the playoffs?
Don't deflect the blame to Pete Carroll. No, I see what you're
saying. Am I out here letting Sheldon Richardson go, releasing Richard Sherman, trading Michael Bennett just because the Seahawks missed the playoffs? What did I say, that Russell Wilson was 2 through 7 spots or whatever lower than he should have been? 2 through 9 spots lower than he should have been?
Look, I want you to feel
shame. Did I invite Jordan
Peterson
to training camp because the Seahawks missed the playoffs?
I mean, technically it wasn't training camp, but don't deflect the issue here. You and Pete Carroll can both be wrong.
What is Ben B looking at? Was he looking at the breadth of Russell Wilson's career just last year?
The breadth of his career, but I don't think last year was different materially in terms of the the overall value statistics.
I mean, maybe it's because DVOA underrates Russell Wilson somewhat, but I think both
passing DVOA underrates Russell Wilson.
Well, they should have a combined DVOA that includes rushing and passing.
It would be nice if they did that.
Where did he rank in QBR last year, though?
Not great.
So what am I supposed to look at then?
The bigger sample.
I'm digging in on this opinion.
No. What have I done?
I'm so mad about Pro Football Reference not loading right now. This is the worst thing that's ever happened.
Hopefully, by the time this podcast airs, you Pro Football Reference will be back
up for us. We can't find
it,
but I'm just going to go ahead and make the blanket statement that Kirk Cousins was 50 to 60 career average value.
Approximate
value better than Andrew Luck.
That's preposterous.
All I've ever seen Andrew Luck do is hand the ball off to Trent Richardson and then get way down in playoff games and be forced to pass.
And then when he was forced to pass, he was pretty good. Pretty, pretty good.
The thing about the Colts, I'm going to come back to this Russell Wilson thing. The team that they remind me of the most is the Cleveland Cavaliers in the NBA. A team where you have one good player, which I'm willing to admit that Andrew Luck is a good player.
You're putting him on the same pedestal as LeBron here?
No. Just, situation-wise. And then manage to take what looked like maybe a promising young team and then just destroy all of the talent around him.
I mean, the Cavs still have Kevin Love.
Well, the Colts still have T.Y. Hilton, but they have nothing else.
Right.
To be able to not be able to build anything else around him and make bad moves and like get older for some reason over the time and maybe even get more expensive. You're like, you've ended the situation. You're like, now we're older, more expensive, and have...
And then blame it on Andrew Luck's contract.
Yeah. Pro Football Reference. Anyway, I'm saying that because... The thing about Russell Wilson, because I looked statistically, I didn't have the privilege of reading this Ben B. Athletic article that didn't exist at the time. I'm looking at the statistics that we have available to us between DVOA, between QBR. If we trust in these statistics, that's where Russell Wilson was last year.
But again, last year isn't necessarily representative of who he is as a player, where he will be going forward. I mean,
where was he the year before?
Well, he was injured.
I mean, I'm just saying, like,
but he had a four-season run there.
Okay, there's probably nobody who will defend Russell Wilson more than me. Like, I'm the one who's out here arguing that I think the team will probably exceed expectations next year because they have such a great quarterback. I would take Russell Wilson over literally any quarterback in the NFL to start a team with.
All right, that's going too far.
I'm not. Who are you taking? I still don't believe, like, I just don't see the argument for anybody else.
I mean, the younger
we had this conversation on that exact podcast.
The quarterbacks younger than Russell Wilson have, like, obvious injury concerns.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, if Deshaun Watson is the only other one who's even, like, we would reasonably consider.
Well, Carson Wentz is also in that category.
We're talking about Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz and Deshaun Watson, who both are coming off career-ending injuries.
Career-ending injuries?
Or sorry, wow. season-ending injuries.
Definitely should not take them to start a team if they've got career-ending injuries.
Who are both coming off season-ending injuries.
All right.
So to me, Russell Wilson is the number one player. If you gave me a draft of every single player in the league, I'm probably taking Russell Wilson number one.
But yet you still think he's the 8th through 15th best quarterback.
I don't know if I think that. I'm saying that the last couple of seasons, that's how he's performed.
Yes. And that's
so wait, you're willing to admit this now? I don't have to apologize anymore?
I'm saying that statement is accurate. But you took it as you did. That's not what you said. You said he's the 8th through 15th best quarterback.
Okay. Well, at some point when I didn't want to dig in on this opinion, but somehow here I am. Somehow I've ended up here. But if we're going through two full seasons, and that's the point, we have to maybe adjust our perspective of what he is as a quarterback.
He's also not going to perform this well because he's in an offense with almost no skill position talent and completely ill-suited to his skills.
No, the real reason that I would assume that his stats haven't been as good the last couple of seasons are because of how bad the offensive line is, and it's pretty impossible to take that out of the equation, to basically get stats that put him behind an average offensive line or a good offensive line.
That's correct.
So that to me, I guess Dak maybe would be interesting, but I still probably would take Russell Wilson over Dak. So that, to me, is the reason that he hasn't performed as well the last two seasons.
But yet he will perform well going forward.
Because the offensive line is going to be better?
Well,
what about this offense? What about this? Is it,
because he can be a free agent in a couple of years here.
Is it DJ Fluker that's making you feel this way?
Mike Solari?
Mike Solari?
On that hopeful note.
Pro Football Reference! Anyway, I do not think that Russell Wilson is the 8th through 15th best quarterback, and like 6th seems totally reasonable to me. Like, in a larger sense, that seems totally reasonable, or even a little bit higher, but I'm judging what he has done through the last two seasons.
Sure.
What? You're not even arguing against this.
I'm just, you're parsing it pretty thin here. That's all I'm saying.
Am I?
Yeah, I think you are.
Two full seasons?
I mean, you know, one season that he was massively injured.
Okay.
All right.
There's so much tension between us. We're going to fight about Russell's. The problem is, like, I don't even know what we're arguing about because I also, we both like Russell's and think that he's good. There's not, like, there's no disagreement here.
Maybe I'm going to run back last week's take and say that Russell needs to be traded to a team that can actually use his talents.
I mean, no, I wouldn't. I just don't.
As you point out.
How would you actually feel about that? You'd die on the inside.
I mean, look, if you really want to see someone be happy, set them free.
Can't do it.
Okay.
I mean, look, no, it's just not going to. I mean, the good thing about the NFL is that with the franchise tag and things like that, like, Russell Wilson will be a Seahawk for a very long time.
Yes. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks.